Well, it's funny because I used to do those bar A trains occasionally in the summer, and it was funny because all the other conductors hated them because they were the bar A trains, and like they didn't want to deal with you guys, and I hated them because I wanted to be partying with you guys. Like, I was like, fuck this, dude.
Hello, and welcome to the MCM podcast. My name is Max.
And my name is JR.
And we are the intellectual masterminds behind the popular meme account on Instagram, Monmouth County Memes.
And what we do with this podcast is invite, you know, whether they be influencers or business owners or comedians, public figures in New Jersey, and trying to help get their name out and show what they have to offer to the people of New Jersey.
So I am definitely excited to announce today's guest. He is our first comedian that we are having on, as JR just said. So he's extremely well-known around New Jersey, especially the Jersey Shore, and has been featured on MTV, Spike, The Artie Lang Show, and Comedy Central.
And so I guess without further ado, welcome Ryan Marr to the first fourth ever MCM podcast. You can find him on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Ryan Marr Comedy. And unfortunately, this isn't going to be on for 2 weeks, but tomorrow you have a show going on at Bar A.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks for having us, guys. It's me. I'm still half asleep. I was late for this. I feel bad. You know, and it's funny because you guys, you're very funny on Instagram. You make me laugh, but I love how like professional and serious you guys are with this. Like, because you have all kinds of different business owners on and stuff, right?
Sure.
Yeah, you're not used to us derelict comics. Like, eventually you get musicians in here. I was supposed to be here an hour ago, and I woke up at 11:30, and I was supposed to be here at 11. So I feel bad.
You shouldn't. We were honestly late too this morning. We went to this Pliables like thing. Whatever this store, and we were like, oh my god, let's run. We're gonna be late. So I'm not gonna lie. When you DM'd us saying that,
It was like a sigh of relief because we got here to my house at 11:30.
We told you to get here at 11:30. So
I bet you the Pliables people wouldn't have been late. Like, they would have gotten up early. They would have had, you know, a protein shake. They would have been ready.
It's funny you say so because last time we shot a podcast, they came and delivered stuff to our house before we even started. So they wouldn't have been late. You're right.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you could tell by looking at me. I'm not a Pliables customer. I've had it. It's delicious.
It's
not a way of life for me, Pliables. Let's put it that way.
I was kind of like that too.
I'm more of like a Jersey Mike's guy. Let me know when you have them on.
We have a friend who works at Jersey Mike's. We'll have him on. We'll get some free sandwich.
I want to have them. I want to have Cluck U too. There's like this crazy dude that always posts on like the Cluck U Red Bank page. He's like pouring gasoline on himself. That's the type of guy I want on.
There used to be one in Brick where I grew up. I don't know if it's still there, but I know there's one in Wall. That's
okay.
I mean, when I was a kid, Cluck U was big in Brick.
I'm older than
you guys. I mean, dude, it's fried chicken. How could you go wrong?
It's hard. It's really tough not to.
Are we allowed to curse on here? Good.
Yeah, you're fine. All right. Don't worry about it.
We're not making money off this right now. So earlier on, we're fine.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about YouTube taking everything away from us. Yeah, that's later on.
Not yet.
Just Spotify. Eventually. Yeah, we gotta watch out.
So I guess, you know.
First I just want to say, how are you doing today, other than waking up a little late?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to be here. I have a gig tonight. This actually worked out perfect when you asked me to do this. I'm local tonight. I have a gig in Brick at Quaker Steak and Lube, which is an interesting place. It's a chain. I think they're pretty big down south. There's a couple. I think there's one, you know, in Edison as well as the one in Brick. And an acquaintance of mine who I've done business with in the past at different places, he's like the regional manager, and they wanted to try a comedy night in their little side room that has like, you know, 60 seats.
Cool.
And I said, you know, let's do it. And it's sold out. So I'm going to go there. And it's a little weird because over the last 2 years of my career, I've been doing this since 2006 and full time since 2009, but I don't have a manager anymore. I kind of went off on my own, and I'm booking a lot of my own shows, and it's interesting because it's a completely different aspect of the business.
Yeah.
So, you know, it used to just be show up, get on stage, do the show, leave. Now it's like, oh shit, let me get there, you know, make sure the PA works, make sure. And honestly, I thought I wouldn't enjoy it, but I am enjoying it because I have more control. I get to choose my openers now, which is really cool.
Sure.
I'm producing shows at other venues and putting together shows that I want. I don't know if you guys are very familiar with comedy clubs. What winds up happening a lot of times is that these bookers and owners, you just see these situations where it's like, why did they put those three acts together?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Sure.
You know, and they're all amazing comics, but it just doesn't vibe well. Now I'm in a position where when I produce these shows, even if I'm not putting myself on it, it's like, okay, well, I know that if these three guys or girls go, like, it's gonna kick ass. It's gonna be cool. So it's a fun little change for me. And now I feel like I'm more hands-on, you know, because it used to just be, okay, write the jokes, go perform them. Now it's, okay, I got to deal with this guy. And, you know, and sometimes it's stressful, but it pays off in the end. It's worth it.
You're saving more money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you really, that was great. You went through, like, a lot of our stuff that we want to talk about.
I guess the podcast is over. All right, guys, good seeing you.
Thanks for driving 40 minutes around. So, I mean, we do try and do our research on the people that come in.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, you know, the stuff that, you know, everyone asks is, you know, how you started. We've already kind of, you know, we have so much deeper, awesomer, better stuff to talk about. That's, but of course, for the fans that are just kind of maybe either seeing you for the first time or want to hear it again, I want you to talk about your story, you know, coming, you know, because you haven't always been a comedian. I know it started out as a part-time thing. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's something that you love and you want to follow your dreams. So I just want to talk to us about how, you know, it's been something where you came from something else, of course, and then you're into this now, and, you know, how you like it.
Yeah, I was involved in the pro wrestling business, and I was like a lifelong fan of pro wrestling, and I got involved in it at like the age of 15. I had a buddy of mine. I'm older than you guys. I'm 36. So it's funny now, because now I'm starting to finally get like a little bit of a younger fan base. Whereas even when I started in my early 20s, I was doing comedy. The people that would come see me were in their 40s and above. So now it's kind of cool to get like a younger fan base. But back before, you know, memes and social media, there were message boards. That was the big thing in the late 90s. And I had a friend who was just as much into pro wrestling as I was. And he just started like messing with these like independent pro wrestlers on these message boards. And then we started going to shows because they thought he was funny. And so then like he kind of fell off with it, but I stayed involved. And even before that, as a kid, Iron Mike Sharp, who was like a wrestler in the WWF back in the day, he had a school in Brick, New Jersey, where he taught guys how to wrestle. And a lot of guys came from that school. Stevie Richards, who went on to be in ECW and WWE, and Chris Candido would stop by and work out there. All these guys. And I kind of just stayed in touch, and I would set up the ring at these indie shows, and then it led to me ring announcing, which led to me being the heel manager for a lot of these guys. And one thing just kind of led to another. And comedy was always something that I wanted to try, but I'd be lying if I told you that my goal wasn't to be like a bad guy manager in the WWE.
Exactly.
Which kind of went away for a long time. Now it's starting to make a comeback, but I mean, Paul Heyman, who's with Brock Lesnar, is doing such a phenomenal job that like no one's going to touch that ever.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like he's the only guy. But yeah, so I did that. And then I went to college for broadcast journalism, and college wasn't really my thing. Okay. I got a job at B98.5 radio, and you know, just then I dropped out of college like an idiot. You know, like, oh, I got a job. But here's the thing. So like, you know, we were talking a little before, terrestrial radio is dying. So that became a thing, and where it's like, okay, satellite started to take over, and the guys from terrestrial that had the experience were getting the satellite jobs. And then I just bounced around a little bit, you know. Literally, I was a bouncer at Martell's Tiki Bar for 2 years.
Fun place. Loved it there.
And next thing you know, I'm working on the railroad as a train conductor for New Jersey Transit. Yeah. And I was miserable.
Well, you were making good money, right?
Yeah. Good money. But dude, when I tell you, like, just feeling, and I'm not trying to insult anybody because I still talk to some of the guys. But dude, it was just like, fuck, like, what am I doing with my life?
Sure.
You know, my grandfather worked on the railroad. My uncle did. My dad worked in New Jersey Transit Bus. They all provided for their families, made great livings. But I'm 22 and I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be creative. I want to be doing this fun shit. And I'm dealing with these guys that literally come to work because they hate their wives. And then they're at work, and then they hate the passengers. And it was just this whole circle of hatred and just misery. And I was like, I can't fucking do this,
you know?
And, there was a comedy club. Oops, sorry about that.
No, you're good.
There was a comedy club.
You're a busy guy. Of course, it's the other gig you got going today.
There was a comedy club that I'm not going to mention because we'll eventually get to that. I don't do business with them anymore, but they had like an open mic night, which I didn't know was a tournament. And I went up for the first time and I won round number one. And they're like, okay, come back next week. And then I won round number two, and I wound up winning the whole thing. Now, the problem was that that gave me a big head. That made me very cocky, because I'm like, I'm going up here now, and I'm competing, quote unquote, against these guys and girls that have 2-3 years of experience, but it was all open.
But you've never done, like, before that, never, like, on stage?
Never before. I mean, the thing that I had as my background was being the bad guy manager on the indies.
Sure.
Which, you know, a lot of times, like, Honky Tonk Man, WWE Hall of Famer, like, we'd get back into the locker room, and he'd go, shit, man, you had me cracking up out there. I had to bite my lip so I didn't laugh. So I always was told that I was a funny guy, but I wasn't ignorant enough to believe that that would translate to being a good stand-up.
Yeah.
And so I got really cocky, and my prize for winning this tournament was getting to do a 5-minute set opening for Jackie the Joke Man Martling.
Yeah.
And so I remember getting to the club that night and the owner telling me, all right, do 5 minutes, and being cocky enough to be like, only five. Because each week I was going up doing 3 to 5, and I thought, oh, I have a half hour of material. Yeah. Sure enough, though, there was a difference. When you're doing the open mics, it's a very supportive environment. These guys and girls that were doing it were bringing their parents, their aunts, their uncles, their friends.
Yeah.
No one's going to shit on you and tell you you suck. Even if they're there to support somebody else, they're not going to be like, get off the stage, dick. You know, it's just not
going to
happen.
It's like going to a little kid's Little League game and the parents cheer for both sides.
That is a perfect analogy, except, you know, it's 22-year-old drunks that they're doing it for. So anyway, I go up in front of Jackie Martling and I'm thinking, oh, 5 minutes. But then I look into the audience and it's doctors, it's lawyers, it's, you know, people that paid $60 a ticket. And I went up there and I stayed confident because I was used to speaking in front of large groups of people. And I forget what the first joke was, but it didn't hit. And then the second joke didn't hit. And then I was like, oh, fuck. And that became the longest 5 minutes of my life. Like, yeah. I remember being about 45 seconds in being like, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
But at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm already invested in this. Let me get serious with it, you know? And that's when I realized, holy shit, I don't have a half hour material. I don't even have 5 minutes. I had stuff that worked at open mics. I mean, when I tell you the shit that I was doing was so fucking brutal, like just not even funny. Like I was a train conductor still at the time. So I remember one of the jobs I did was in Trenton, and the Trenton train station is in a not very nice area. And so you're going over this little bridge and there was a sign that said no horses. And it's like in the middle of the ghetto. And I remember like that was a bit that I would do, which was so fucking stupid. Like, you know, like almost like Seinfeld-esque without the brilliance. Like, sure. You know, oh, a horse in the hood. Yeah. Like, you know, stupid shit like that. And just, and that's what you do when you start out. You just try for these observations that really mean nothing. They're not true to your life. They're not true to what you go through. You're just like, oh my God, I need material. Where can I grab from? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's crazy. I mean, the fact that, like, it's at first, like, you just coming up and doing that, and, you know, it's so scary. But like you said, when you're on that stage, there's no turning back. Like, you have to go with it. And I mean, listen, even the fact that you're up there in the first place, in my opinion, is something not a lot of people would even do in the first place. They'd be scared to even be up there.
Well, you know what's funny to me, too? Like, I mean, the open mics, they were... It was kind of like a dare to myself. But what amazes me now is when I see people that want to do it and they'll go up in an environment like, all right, I did a show in Connecticut once. I'll never forget. It was an audition and I was already working for about 2 years as a comic. But so what they did was it was like 6 open mic level guys and then they would audition 1 or 2 guys. But the host was a professional who worked the club. And I'll never forget, right before my audition spot, this kid who had never done comedy before goes up and he's shit-faced. And he goes up and he's like, my sister has this stuffed animal. It's called the Purple Monster. Where's this going? And I fuck it. Like, he's just so I'm like, oh my God. I have to, and like, people are like, what the fuck? And people are leaving. So the host,
I would love that.
Just goes, of course, thank you guys. You would love it, but the audience did not. I mean, it was Connecticut, you know, so it was like, huh, what is this? So the host went up afterwards, and even though it was my audition, he made it look like I was a special guest.
Yeah.
Which it happens a lot in comedy, we'll bail you out. Like, he lied. He was like, you've seen this guy on Comedy Central, and you've seen him here. And that got them to go, okay, he's not the Purple Monster guy fucking the stuffed animal. And then I went up and I was able to have a good set. So a lot of that happens too. It's basically illusions being created, you know, is the audience sees or hears certain things, they're going to go, okay, we'll take this guy serious.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned that first, you know, actual 5 minute set you did didn't go perfectly well. I mean, like, how long do you think it was terrible? Was it a total bomb?
Oh, without a doubt.
So how long did you think it took you to like find, you said you were doing, you know, like observational stuff. How long did it take for you to like find your voice and what you wanted to say and the type of material you wanted to put out?
Well, so here's part of the thing too. And now, I mean, look, I believe in constant evolution and changing. And it's funny because even though I'm not a huge fan of today's current pro wrestling product, for those that are wrestling fans, there's a guy, Chris Jericho, who's, God, almost 50. And I've been a fan of his since I was like 15 or 16 years old. And he's constantly evolved. His character has gone through all these different incarnations over, God, 7 or 8 different times, you know? And comedy, I believe if it's the best form of comedy, it's truth. And I think as a person, you evolve, right? So I feel like what I was doing then was I was being more gritty. And I was talking about shit that bothered me, stuff that I saw, and it was about the political correctness in society and things like that. And I still have elements of that in my act, but now I'm also doing a lot more self-deprecation because you learn certain things. There's a guy, Jay Black, who I used to open for, who I'd go on stage at the time. I remember I had like an Orange County Choppers like work shirt and jeans and Doc Martin boots, and I was in a little bit better shape than I am now, but I still had the shaved head and, you know, the goatee. And I would go up, and if I dropped one F-bomb, like I remember, I would notice audience members be like, oh. But then Jay Black, who would go up like in a cardigan sweater, and, you know, he would go up and he would talk about pussy farts. And those same people that would cringe at me saying fuck would be like, oh, because it was like their grandson saying something dirty.
Yeah.
You know, so you learn how, you know, even things that you can't control, an audience would respond to.
Yeah.
I can't help how I look. I'm a big guy. I'm, you know, whatever. Maybe some would find that intimidating. So now what I do is I do a lot more self-deprecation. I do a lot more like what I would talk with my buddies about. I talk about gaining weight. I talk about, you know, being single and approaching this world now with dating.
And I saw your dating set the other.
And so I feel like that kind of disarms an audience, puts them at ease, makes them feel uncomfortable. So that now when I do go into my politically incorrect stuff and I'm making fun of, you know, different people or whatever, they're going to go, oh, he's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, he just talked about his man tits for 10 minutes.
Well, they could relate to you. And the thing is what, like with that, with what you're saying is, you know, they're developing a connection with you where they like you first. And then when you do come up with the more controversial stuff, you know, he's a good guy. He's just an average guy. He, you know, but if they didn't like you at first and then you say, you know, the more fucked up shit, showing up with pitchforks at your house and shit like that.
Well, it's funny too. You have to connect with the audience. And when I was just out in LA again in December, I did a spot with that with a friend of mine. She lives in Ventura, California. Girl I went to elementary and high school with, and she was like, hey, a friend of mine's running a comedy show at the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club. Would you like to do a spot? So I went up and I did it. And I noticed that what a lot of them were doing, and you see this in New York City too, these showcase rooms, because they're wanting to do a Letterman spot. They're wanting to get on, not Letterman, but I just dated myself, Jimmy Fallon. they want one of those late night spots. So they're doing their 6 to 7 minute set and they're just going up and going right into jokes. And I was watching, like, and they're professionals out there, but it was like 6 or 7 comics go up and they were just eating it because this audience, they want to be engaged.
Yeah.
So I had like an 8 minute spot and I went up there and I, you know, greeted them. How's everybody doing? Anybody celebrate anything? Which is tough to do in a showcase format, but I did like a minute on that. Went to the self-deprecation, and then the host, who was a professional, was like, oh my God, you got applause breaks and you did.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, because I engaged them.
Yeah.
I said, you know, I know that the booker for Jimmy Kimmel isn't in the fucking crowd tonight. Like, he's not going to go, oh, Ryan on a Thursday night at Ventura Harbor, come on down, you know? So it's about engaging the audience, and I feel like a lot of that gets lost.
Yeah.
You know, because everyone's focused on, oh my God.
Just good material.
Yeah. And you need to have the good material, but everyone's just worried about putting up that video clip or, you know, going viral and it's just, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you know, looking, you like you're saying about being on other shows and things like that, MTV Spike. Personally, back in the day, I don't know if I was the only one, but no one else really watched it. I used to watch the Artie Lang show and I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, I watched your whole segment on there. I thought it was really funny.
Thanks, man.
I saw, you know, John obviously was there too. Did you ever get to meet, like, there was a guy, what is his name? Mike Buschetti, who would always have on just one of the funniest.
Yeah, Mike's a good dude.
He does stand up too, right?
Yeah.
And
he's actually a very funny stand up. A lot of one liners.
Yeah.
A lot of self deprecation. Artie and him, I haven't spoken to Artie in a while. I'd love to reconnect with
him. He just had the show, I think, in Red Bank, like at the Count Basie, not too weird thing about Count.
I haven't spoken to him. I dealt with his manager recently because I wanted to get Artie for a show, but because of the way the contracts were working out, because of his stuff with the Basie, it didn't really pan out. But I believe now they have a podcast. It's called Artie Lang's Halfway House, and he has Bichetti back.
Good. With him. I'll watch that.
Yeah, okay. And I think a lot of it's on YouTube, and Artie posts. I think Artie on Instagram is ArtieLang67.
Sure.
And he posts a lot of that stuff, dude. And he's doing good, man, so God bless him.
Yeah, you know? I'm happy just to see him being healthy and able to do a lot of stuff because – you know, he's at his best. He's such a funny dude. I mean, just being able to.
Well, I think that's part of. And look, I'm not. I don't want to let on like I was like good friends with him. He was very nice to me, and I enjoyed his company and every time we were around together. But I think that was what part of his demons were, was the fact that, first of all, the guy's a genius. I think I'm very good at what I do. I have to work very hard. Not saying that Artie doesn't, but Artie's just a genius. He's one of those guys that you just laugh when you're around him because he's got that element of being like your uncle from Jersey who's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he also comes up, and a lot of people don't realize this, he is such a deep thinker, and some really brilliant stuff just comes from him as well. So I think that that's a battle. And I think that what happens is that whole Stern fan base, and I've seen it too, you know, you have your buddies, they're like, ah, shit, Ryan, yeah, you know, I used to get fucked up with him, whatever. And they're great guys, and they mean well, but, you know, when I do something that's really well thought out and written and that I've practiced, they're like, yeah, what are you, fucking too smart for us now? And sure. I think that that's, like, that constant internal battle that Artie's had to deal with is that, like, yeah, he's the lovable, you know, guy who drinks his Jack Daniels and gambles, but also he comes out with some brilliant stuff. And I think that's a balance that people have to, you know, keep in this business. And it's tough to balance sometimes. Yeah,
when you look at the state of comedy right now, you were talking about how, like, brilliant Artie Lang is. Who do you see as being the best at what they're doing?
Oh, it's so tough, man, because it's like music. It's subjective. Mm-hmm. And what's funny about it, it's so much like music but so different in the sense that if you don't – I'm not a musician, and I wish I was. I have no musical inclination whatsoever. I can't sing. I took drum lessons as a kid. I was terrible. I feel like you can hone. I feel like you have to have a natural talent, and then you can hone it, or you're a genius where you just do it, which is very rare. I have a friend. It's so funny. He's a doctor. He's an MD, and I'm not going to say his name because it was a private conversation, but he's hilarious. He was in the Air Force. He became a doctor. And I said to him, I said, well, what made you like decide you want to become a doctor? He goes, I was 16 and I was a redhead. I was like, I got to do something, dude. You know, and he goes, I had to bust my ass. He goes, because, you know, I'm not a genius. I had to work hard. So I think that, you know, with comedy, there's some guys that just are just brilliant and they get up there and they do it. And there's other guys that work really hard at it. And it is subjective. If you hear a song, you might go, it's not my thing, but you're not going to go, what the fuck? That song sucks. Yeah. A lot of people aren't going to do that. With comedy, that happens.
Yeah.
With comedy, if you personally don't find somebody funny, you tend to go, that guy fucking sucks. Why does he have a job? So I don't know, man. For right now, there's so many guys that are working that aren't known, you know, and that are really good. As far as guys that are known, like, I mean, I love Bill Burr. But again, a lot of those guys too, like it's an interesting dichotomy because they say the best comedy comes from truth, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bill Burr is such an angry guy. Well, you just sold out Madison Square Garden, five nights. What are you so fucking angry about, dude?
Like, yeah, you know? I know.
So, I mean, there's that always that balance too. I try, especially over the last couple of years, to just kind of focus on what I'm doing. But there's so many guys out there that are just, you know, that are killers, man.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem too, is that there's so many great comics and not enough venues.
So Ryan, one thing, you know, we know social media pretty well. I mean, the thing I hate about it is that you kind of have to be so PC to an extent that, you know, people might try and, you know, cancel you if they don't like what you're seeing. I see, I don't know if I follow, we'll have to friend you on Facebook, but I see that you post on your Instagram a lot of your posts.
Yeah, screenshots.
And, yeah, and they're hilarious because you don't hold back. And that for a guy like me, I love that. Like,
I've actually calmed down. believe it or not. You know what, dude? And it's weird. And again, maybe I've hindered my own career. But yeah, I didn't take this job to have to be told what to do. And listen, you know, some of the best advice I've gotten and some of the worst advice I've gotten is from some of these, you know, full-time comics that are in their 50s and 60s. They've given me fantastic pointers on, you know, what to do as far as, you know, honing the writing and stage presence. Or, hey, you know what, your cadence when you delivered that joke, maybe if you tried it this way. And thank you. And I still cherish that, you know, because you're always learning. But one of the worst things was taking advice on the business aspect of it. And I feel now that what's happening, you know, I'm 36 years old. You guys are in your early 20s. I'm feeling like there's starting to be a resurgence. And I see it a little bit with you guys. You guys, though, you have a different thing going because, I mean, you're dealing with different, like, businesses and stuff like that. And you guys got a very professional thing going. But I'm noticing amongst your age group now, there's a little bit of a pushback. You know, I don't do colleges anymore. I'm actually debating maybe getting back into them. The last college I did was Thomas College in Waterville, Maine, where they handed me a list, a literal list of things that I couldn't talk about.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I'm reading down the list. And the best part, I go, you know, so you have the student advisor and then you have like their faculty advisor and they book the show together. And one of the things says no size jokes. So I jokingly say backstage, I go, well, I don't talk about my dick. And then they get like all like, oh God. And this is probably about 6-7 years ago now. And, I go, what does that mean, no size jokes? They go, well, you know, we don't want you to talk about, you know, someone being too thin or overweight. And I said, well, I'm overweight. I said, and I do a lot about that. I said, you know, it's actually kind of right up front. And then she goes, oh, well, you're not that overweight. And I'm like, look, I don't need you to placate to me. I'm telling you what my act is. And she goes, well, we don't want you to do that. And I said, but it's about me. And she goes, well, there might be somebody in the audience that's having some issues with their size and accepting it. And so finally I just got so fucking annoyed, and it was a high paying gig. I was getting like $1,000 for the hour. I went out there and I was like, hey everybody, how you doing? I'm like, tonight I'm not allowed to talk about drugs or sex or whatever. And then I kind of got my way through it, but I also noticed something too. And again, you don't want to shame or whatever, but the people that are going to a comedy show on a Friday night at a college in the student union are, you know, wearing their Harry Potter hoodies and stuff like that. They're not the people that I want to associate with when I was in college. No. You know, they weren't the people that were going to parties, trying to meet people. I feel like a lot of times there are people looking to be offended, looking to be angered. And I got to a point where I don't want to sound like a tough guy, because you don't want to hurt people's feelings. That's not the goal of this. But it's like, stay the fuck home, dude. And as far as Facebook and Instagram, I don't even really do Twitter that much anymore. But like, if you don't like it, don't follow me.
Exactly.
I am so tired. I used to try to explain myself because I still do care. I do not want to hurt anyone's feelings. I think I've gotten this reputation over the years as being edgy and wanting to shock people. I don't. I want to make you laugh. But if my sense of humor is not your cup of tea, then go the other way. You know, I'm tired of trying to have to explain. I really don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. I don't want to make anyone feel bad about themselves. It's not my intent, but I can't worry about that.
Yeah. No.
I have a great story that I'll tell you real quick. There's a comic named Mitch Fatel who's amazing. He had a Comedy Central special back in the mid 2000s. It was called Mitch Fatel's Magical. Does a lot of very sexual material, but it's funny. He goes up there and he talks like this. He gets like real creepy. So he does this joke, and it's a great joke where he says, I went on a date last week with a girl and I knew I was going to get laid because she left her drink at the table. Now this was pre-Me Too. You got to remember, this was like, you know, whatever. And the fucking the audience comes unglued, right? I go up, and at the time, my closing bit and my CD that I put out in 2011 was called Off the Rails, and it was illustrated. It was a train with a guy laying on the tracks and me standing on top of the train in my conductor uniform holding a microphone. Because when there were train suicides, which was very prevalent at the Jersey Shore, but this was before all of that. I wrote the joke in 2006. That started happening around 2010. And I do the joke about train suicide and how we would get 3 paid days off. And I was like, it's almost like an incentive. You know, I would go for the 3-day weekend every week and stuff. And it's a whole bit that I would do. Woman comes up to me after the show. Mitch is standing next to me. He's selling his CD. I'm selling mine. She buys his CD, tells him he's fantastic, comes up to me and says, you're a scumbag.
Yeah.
And I said, excuse me?
Yeah.
Turns out she decides to tell me that her nephew was one of the people that jumped in front of a train. And I'm saying, you know what? Like, I didn't know that. We don't get a list of what to talk about or what not to talk about when I walk in. You know what I mean? So what are we doing? Lighting candles in the...
I completely... Like, I was looking at
I was
going
to say, what are you trying to do here? You're trying to interrupt his great story.
No, it's great. You can't hear that song, but yes, I was looking at
it. You can totally hear it. It's totally very loud.
No, but my point is that you can't placate to everybody.
No.
You know, every joke has... And I hate to use the term victim, but every joke has a victim, a target, right?
Yeah.
So... You know, you can't laugh at everything else that's edgy, that's going to offend somebody, and then go, oh, but no, that hits too close to home for me.
Yeah.
You know, so I said to the woman, I said, okay, well, I'm sorry, but he was doing date rape jokes, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trying to throw him under the bus, but I was just trying to say, like, why is train suicide off limits, but a date rape joke's okay? And I swear to God, she looked me in the eye and she goes, well, I was never raped. Oh, so that makes it okay. So now if somebody else in the audience was raped, do they have the right to hate him but love my joke about train suicide? Like, just fucking stop it. Go to the comedy club, forget your problems, and just laugh or don't. We don't want you to fake laughing, but you don't have a right to say he shouldn't talk about that. You just don't have that right.
Well, why was she going in the first place? Like, then if you don't want to, like, laugh, and because, you know, if you put yourself in that situation, you know, you might be around people that will say something that you might not agree with. That doesn't mean he's a shitty person or this and that. Just, you might not laugh, but why hate him?
I think what happens too is I was probably about 12 years old when the Nutty Professor movie with Eddie Murphy came out. I almost said the original Nutty Professor, but it wasn't. The original was with Jerry Lewis. But I remember there's that scene in the movie where Dave Chappelle, you know, is the comic on stage and he rips apart, you know, Sherman Klump or whatever. And then, of course, Eddie Murphy comes back as Buddy Love and destroys him. But I have a feeling that for some reason, you know, I'm amazed at how many people have never been to a comedy club and never been to a comedy show that enjoy comedy, which cracks me up. Like, you know, I'll have people that'll come up to me and go, oh my God, Sebastian Maniscalco. And I'm like, yeah, I've opened for him. And they're like, really? I'm like, crazy. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, the guy did clubs before he blew up. I think what happens is people see that scene where Dave Chappelle's character is attacking Sherman Klump for being fat and going, oh, come on, you're so fat. That's not what happens. I mean, there's jokes directed at audience members like, oh, hey, buddy, like, you know, do you really have to wear that shirt? You know, stuff like that. I'm looking at you. No, stuff along those lines.
Yes,
I'll change.
Yeah, but I mean, no one's, we're not up there to make you feel like shit about yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the misconception. A lot of people go, I can't sit up front. Because the comedian will see us. Well, yeah, there's 130 seats. I'm going to fucking see all of you.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is you're not trying to make someone feel shitty about themselves, but it's good to laugh at yourself sometimes. Oh, when a comedian points out something that's, like, you know, funny about you, if you can't laugh about it, that's your own problem.
Ryan, really, please rip us apart tomorrow night. I will, like, we will never.
Seriously. We'll be in the front and you can talk shit about us.
Like, there's nothing, like, that's what I love. Like, we tear each other apart all the time as friends. Like, you know what, you with your boys. Like, it just, like, there's nothing like, oh, dude, you never get laid.
Well, that's why I love the bar. RA shows, because what's interesting about those, I've performed there, God, so many times over the years. And it's been about 3 years since I've done a show there. But Bar A is different. Tommy Janarone, who's one of the owners, he's an entertainment attorney. I met him through a comedian named Jim Florentine years ago. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Crank Anchors on Comedy Central.
Okay.
Jim Florentine was the voice of Special Ed. Okay. I got mail.
Yeah.
And I opened for Jim at a local club back in 2007. And then he brought me to Bar A afterwards. And I met Tommy. And Tommy's literally one of my, you know, five best friends. We've had so many great times over the years, and he's one of the owners of Bar A. But what I love about there is that people show up to Bar A. There's a lot of people who I know, a lot of friends, a lot of acquaintances, a lot of people who have followed my career over the years, and it's awful. I mean, anything goes, dude. I mean, tomorrow at Bar A, and I know when this podcast comes out, it's going to already be past, but it's the biggest equivalent to feeling like a rock star. You know, and I've done the Borgata, you know, 1,000 seats, the Music Box. But there's something about Bar A where, again, I said earlier, I wanted to be a musician and I have no musical inclination. I feel like a rock star because it's just, it's a party. You know, there's going to be girls coming up on stage, handing me shots that Tommy sent them, like, hey, go get them fucking drunk. There's going to be that. And it's awesome. You know, now they're not all like that, obviously. You know, I'll do corporate gigs where I have to wear a suit, and they're fun too. I enjoy every aspect of the job, but the Bar A shows, man, they're something special. Even the Jank shows that I do in the summer, those are great.
I can't wait for those.
But, yeah. You know, even that, it's a Tuesday night. It's a little, you know, the audience is a big age range. There's people in there. Tomorrow is just going to be fucking animals at Bar A. It's going to be a good time.
I'm looking forward to it. I really am. One of the things you brought up, Dave Chappelle, I want to talk about, in a way, the state of comedy right now, because there are some people who get away with being offensive, like the way you were talking about. Like, Dave Chappelle doesn't. Like, I mean, he does in the fact that he's successful, but he gets nailed by everybody for it. And then, like, you were, I mean, Artie Lang, but I'm thinking, like, when I listen to Howard Stern still, I mean, it's almost surprising that, like, I feel like he doesn't get the criticism for, like, the whole the whack pack and stuff like that. Like,
well, he does change a lot. I'm a big Howard Stern.
He has changed, yeah. But I still think that sometimes when I listen, I'm like, I'm shocked that he can still, and they play the older episodes too. I'm like, I'm surprised that people don't get mad about this, because, like, Dave Chappelle gets, you know, hammered for making jokes about, you know, gay people, LGBT, all that stuff. He just gets absolutely destroyed. And Howard Stern sometimes makes fun of people with mental disabilities and kind of gets away with it. So what do you think is really, you know, is it because it's radio?
I couldn't answer. I think because Howard has gone very left wing in a lot of ways, which, you know, it's amazing. People go, oh, he's evolved, he's changed. But he still did something called Fist Fest a few months ago, which I'm not even going to talk about. If you guys want to Google that are listening, Google it.
Sounds pretty fun.
But all the 12-year-olds watching, definitely.
don't. But here's the interesting thing, though, too. And I've always had this argument, and I've gotten to see it firsthand, because I did a lot of work with Beetlejuice early on. I'll never forget doing the Lane Theater in Staten Island, New York. It was myself, the Reverend Bob Levy, and Beetlejuice. Yeah. And Beetlejuice was pretty much billed as the headliner. And I went up and I did a half hour.
Yeah.
Bob Levy went up, did an hour. Crushed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Beetlejuice went up to do 5 minutes. Yeah. And it was basically Levy holding the mic and just asking Beat questions and Beat answering them.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, you know, I had my CD, Levy had his CD and t-shirts, but who sold, you know, $1,000 in pictures? Beetlejuice.
Yeah,
and I always said to those people, you know, if it weren't for Howard Stern, what would Beetlejuice be doing? In all honesty, he'd be, you know, his mental capacity is to the point where he couldn't even hold a menial job.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you know, he's made enough money to pay the rent for his mother and everything like that. So when I say, it's kind of like that old argument, not to get political, where people that are very, you know, pro-life, you know, abortion. Yeah, well, what happens when that kid's born? What are you going to give a fuck? You know, so it's very easy for people to go, oh, Howard exploits these people. No, they're getting between $3,000 to $5,000 in appearance.
Yeah.
You know, Gary the Conqueror, as they call him now. He used to be Gary the Retard.
Yeah.
People have had him at their weddings.
Yeah.
You know, just like as a goof. And, oh, how horrible, he's being exploited. Yeah, he got $3,000 for that.
No, I completely agree with
you. So, that, again, it comes down to you can't worry about what people think. You just got to go, okay. And look, I'm just as guilty. I'm only finally now at 36 getting to a point where I'm like, all right, man. Because no matter what you do, no matter what you say in this social media culture, someone's going to be offended by it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I completely agree.
It doesn't even have to just be comedy. We just saw Gail King interviewing Lisa Leslie, all right, about Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, you know, the allegations that Kobe, you know, went through in 2003. Lisa Leslie, who was Kobe's best friend, was like a sister to him, says, he never showed those signs to me. I don't believe it. Dot, dot, dot. I'm not saying it didn't happen. Because what she's saying is that I know it didn't happen in her mind, but I can't say woman's lying.
Of course not.
Yeah. So you, no matter what you do, no matter what you say, everyone has a voice. And a lot of people feel that they can just espouse that opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going to piss people off.
Yeah.
So you can either have anxiety about it and say nothing, or you can go, fuck it, I'm going to live my life.
Well, honestly, I think I saw Gail got a lot of backlash. She got,
Snoop Dogg was like, absolutely annihilated her.
Snoop Dogg was like,
things he said.
He's like, I'm going to kill you.
We're coming for you.
Yeah.
I was like,
Jesus. It's not smart. It's just a stupid thing to say. If you get mad at somebody, you know, if you want to respond to that, fine. Yeah. But when you respond with something like, you know, talking about violence or like, you know, it's just, it's not smart.
I've had people, literally that I don't know threaten me with, if you ever get a break, we have screenshots of jokes you've written. Okay, bro. I got Shane Gillis doing the first show at Jenks July 7th. Here's a guy who, you know, he got hired by Saturday Night Live and then fired 3 days later because of an out of context quote from a podcast, you know, 3-4 years ago.
Sure.
And, you know, it made national news, you know, and it's funny because when I see that being talked about in a Democratic presidential debate, I go, really? I go, that's what we need to focus on. You know, you're running for president of the United States and we have to talk about a comedian who made an Asian joke when everybody in the United States of America has ordered Chinese food at some point in their life. And then as soon as the waiter turned around, went, oh, okay, all right, yeah. You know, like, don't fucking act all high and mighty and self-righteous. We embrace differences. I talk about it on stage. There's positive stereotypes, okay? And then there's funny stereotypes that we goof on. They're still stereotypes.
Yeah.
My weight issues started because I was dating an Italian girl for 3 years. She was a phenomenal cook. Everything she made was awesome. And I'd compliment her. I'd be like, baby, that was great. And her response every time, I'm Italian. That's what we do. What do you expect? Positive stereotype. Italian women can cook.
Yeah.
But then once, you know, I point out that her goatee is getting a little thick. And apparently, I'm the asshole.
So
what I'm saying is that just laugh, you know?
Yeah.
Just laugh or don't. But you don't have a right to say, oh, you shouldn't talk about that. Because
we
all embrace stereotypes.
I mean, that's the thing that's scary is you look at other countries and stand-up comedians are getting fined for saying things that are that the government finds to be, you know. And that's the one thing that I think separates us from other countries is that we have the ability to say what we want as long as we're not calling to violence or, you know, saying there's a bomb in a crowded theater. Like you're not allowed to, that's illegal. But I mean,
people, you know, have misconceptions about what the First Amendment really is. I mean, the First Amendment basically just allows you, and I'm not a lawyer, but you know, from my understanding of it, it just means that the government can't punish you for things that you say within reason, like, you know, meaning the fire and a thing, but you can't have your career destroyed. And,
well, your image is screwed up. Like, legally, like, they won't put you in jail. But by the time, you know, everyone causes a witch hunt over one thing that you said, they already fucked you.
Yeah.
So by that point, it's like, you know.
But that's why I feel like, and, you know, again, I hate to say your guys' generation, because I don't even know if technically we're different generations. I mean, I'm 15 years older than you. But
yeah, we are.
The thing is that I have a feeling there's going to be a pushback. And I, because kids naturally rebel, right? So I think what's happening now is that as my generation and a little bit younger is bringing more kids into the world and they're being raised in this environment where everything is considered bullying. You know, when I was a kid, bullying was, you know, we're going to harass this person daily to the point of where they're in tears. Now, bullying is considered some good-natured jokes, horseplay, things of that nature. I have a feeling that the kids that are growing up in that environment are going to push back. They're going to rebel, you know.
Yeah, I'm hoping they do.
Hopefully.
Everything that we see now, I mean, my generation too, like, you know, they want to talk about me too. You know, we grew up on MTV Spring Break. Jerry Springer, girls in bikinis doing crazy shit.
And
now they're like, oh no, you got to do this. Well, now I'm saying to myself, you know what? Look at these kids now that have access to everything on their phones. You know, when I was 12, my idea of pornography was when the scrambled Playboy channel came in and you're like, oh, I think I see a tit. I think that's a tit. That's definitely, oh no, it's the guy, but it's still a tit.
Yeah.
You know, now 13-year-olds have, you know, bukkake gangbangs on their iPhone.
Yeah.
And so how are you going to say that, like, when those people are in their late 20s and 30s and going out, what, that there's not going to be an epidemic of sexual harassment? These fucking kids grew up with that, you know? Yeah. So
it's
tough, man.
I guess it was back then, it was a lot harder to find, you know, these weird fetishes, but like, you could, Jesus.
Well, I mean, like the I mean,
enough about your personal life.
Yeah, don't check. Well, don't look at my.
Yeah. Phone, yeah. Yeah. So we are a different generation, but I still think that, Max and I are like in that last generation where we didn't grow up with smartphones. We grew up with like a Game Boy or like of those.
Did
Nokia
you guys
phones.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't have an actual smartphone until high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like, I definitely think that, like, for example, I have a younger brother who's 12.
Yeah.
You know, and he's always had access to that stuff. Yeah. Like that, I mean,
so maybe we're not as different as we thought, though.
I don't think we're as different, because I definitely think that we had that childhood where we were outside all the time. We were doing stuff with friends every day. And I know that my younger brother and his friends are not like that at all. And like, I would push him, like, you know, you got to like do something. You can't just sit in your house and stare at the iPad or play like video games all day. Like, I mean, it's fun. I get it. You got to go out and do stuff. You got to experience the real world, because you spend so much time living through a screen. It makes real world interactions really difficult.
Yeah, you're right. So I went to now it's Donovan Catholic, but I went to Monsignor Donovan in Tom's River. And I'll never forget, you know, my senior year. I think it was my senior year, which was 2001. That was like the first year that like my Motorola fucking banana flip phone took like a grainy, shitty picture. And yeah. Like, oh my God, this is so fucking cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then I went back a few years later, because I'm still very close with my one English teacher who, you know, loved me and I loved her. She would have me come back for career day and speak to the students. And I'll never forget, I was still in my 20s. And some girl's like, are you on Twitter? And I'm like, yeah, you know, Ryan Marr Comedy. And she's like, okay, thank you. And my phone was in my pocket. And all of a sudden, it was just like, and I'm like, holy shit, all these kids are following me while they're sitting in the classroom. Like, and I'm like, that's a completely different world. Like, we had to carry books. You know, they all have laptops. So
I know.
It's weird to watch things change. But then at the same token, I say to myself, like, I also used to be able to go in my Catholic school uniform to the Exxon in my uniform and buy cigarettes and be like, you know, they were $3 a pack at the time. So I would say to them, hey, give me $5. And I'd have like a little side hustle going, you know.
Yeah.
There was a bar called Phil's Liquor Locker in Silverton. They served me beer in my Catholic school uniform.
Like, clearly knowing you're
on.
So, you know, because it was like some World War II vet who was behind the bar. Hey, kid, how are you? Yeah. You know. So I say to myself, like, okay, that's not good. But at the same token, like, there was a whole culture and becoming more cultured that I feel like this generation isn't going to get. Is that good or bad? I don't know.
There's too many rules nowadays. Like, it's just like,
it feels like you're not free to do.
Of course, like, and what we were talking about is like, I personally, like, I would not like to grow up with this in my hands, because I post stupid shit now as a 23-year-old that I think I know what I'm doing. But like, if I had this in my hand as a freaking, like, you know, 8 or 9 year old, oh my God. Like, I just wouldn't, like, if there's ever a fight going on or something, like, you could literally have that live and just ruin someone. So it's just like,
one of the things I do is Facebook memories every day. I just scroll through it. And sometimes it takes me about a half hour, because it, you know, it's everything that you've ever put on that day.
Yeah.
And I'll come across something and I'll go, oh shit, get rid of that.
Yeah.
You know? I went through my Facebook. I went through my Twitter and we deleted everything that had, I looked up certain words in each post, and I deleted everything that had anything that had anything of any, like.
Yeah. Well, you're going for like a real job, right?
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. I just don't want people
we honestly, we did it for that, but we did it a lot for this because we kind of came out like 2 months ago as the owners.
Yeah.
When for 6 months, there was no one knew
what we were doing.
But now we knew we were going to put a face to this. And what we're saying is, we don't want people to hate the content on our page with 22,000 followers just because they might not like us. Like the content that we're putting up. We put a lot of time and effort into that, but I don't want people to be like, oh, that's funny. But, you know, the account owner is kind of a dick, so we're not going to like as if. I mean, that's why my entire Twitter, I used to post so much stupid shit, deleted that around 2 months ago. Even my Instagram, I'll be honest, I post a lot of like sarcastic shit. That's what I love about you is like you're truthful. And like my sarcastic shit, like I think one of my Instagram posts, I mean, sorry guys, but it was like, it's pretty simple, but I got some backlash. I was like, imagine how many more likes I'd get if I was a half naked chick.
Yeah.
And let me it's so true. I mean, listen.
But what cracks me about that, I mean, I know what you guys are trying to accomplish, but at the same token, you are, I mean, it's memes, it's comedy.
It's jokes, but people try and take it however they want. And that's why the next thing, Ryan, I want to talk to you about is, you know, dealing with criticism. Mm-hmm. We see that on our page. I mean, the thing is, you know, we don't deal with it really live in person so much.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably have to deal with it, you know, when you're on stage or even after. So how do you, you know, how do you keep going? Because obviously sometimes the criticism is hard, but how do you, you know, make it, do you use it as motivation or?
Well, very rarely do people criticize you to your face. It's always, they go online and they say something. And look, I'm not saying that for as much as I don't care about what people think, you know, sometimes you do take things in stride. But again, I mean, as far as like content or whatever, criticism, I can't let it bother me, because to me, comedy is an art form. And I hate saying that because it comes off so pretentious, but it's true. It is. And the late, great Patrice O'Neill said it best: in the attempt of being funny, anything should be able to go. Because again, the intent is not to hurt feelings. The intent isn't like I didn't give up a six-figure job to go on stage and find your insecurity and exploit it and make you feel like shit. I just didn't do that, you know? So again, if something hurts someone's feelings, that's terrible, but it's not what I'm trying to do. Yeah, you know, I opened for Andrew Dice Clay a couple of times, and I'll never forget the Dice girl, man, who I was dating, you know, and you know, it was my most serious relationship since I've been doing this. We were together 3 years. Dice didn't realize that it was my girlfriend. And he says to her, she's up in the front. He's like, oh honey.
No.
He goes, the way that you're built. He goes, you know, but you're not big enough for me. And, you know, she was thin, but she had big boobs, big butt, hips. And he goes, I want a girl the size of the bed. You know, I want a big fat monster. And then he closes it by going, but you're on the right track.
Oh, right.
And she thought it was great. She was laughing, whatever. After the show, backstage at Caroline's, you know, I bring her back and he was like, oh my God, I'm so fucking sorry. And I'm like, nah, dude, like it's a Dice show. She sat up front, whatever. Her feelings aren't hurt. Like she's been with me. She knows what, you know, nobody intends. And that's a guy who sold out arenas, who is known for being like the king of in your face.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, banned from MTV for life in 1990. But even him, he was like, oh shit. Like I didn't want to do that. And, you know, so you got it. You walk that line. Nobody wants to hurt feelings.
Well, Ryan, quick, just question. I mean, you know this more. That's because that's like a character he plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, right? Like that's not him. And because, you know, backstage, like he's a nice guy, right? Like,
very nice guy.
People just think that's him all the time.
I mean, the type of guy that would take pictures with the entire staff. I never forget. I opened for him at that club in Point Pleasant that I was talking about earlier. There was a kid outside who was obvious, you know, special needs. The ticket, this was one of Dice's first times at the club. I think the ticket was like $90. So the kid didn't have the money to come in or whatever. The kid stood outside the show the entire time and he had the old school, you know, Dice vinyl. I forget which one it was, but it was the original one. And I walked outside because I used to smoke cigarettes at the time. And I see the kid just standing there and he's looking through the window and the show was over. And I go, hey, man, what's up? And he goes, oh, you know, I just want to get this, you know, signed for my dad. My dad and I are big fans. So I went in and I was like, hey, Andrew, you know, there's a kid outside. He's like, oh, yeah, bring him in. Kid comes in, he took pictures with him, he signed it, the kid called his dad, Dice got on the phone with him. He's a sweetheart of a guy. Again, you would never know that from the character, but all comedy, the reason it's called an act is it's an act. You know, it's just like professional wrestling. You turn the volume up to 10. It's a side of yourself, it's based in reality, but you turn the volume up. You know, that's why I like doing podcasts, because like I feel like I'm being more myself than I am on stage. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. You want to get a few funny lines in, make the people laugh because you are a comedian. But it's not the same as, oh, shit, I have to be on stage for an hour and get a laugh every 9 seconds. Yeah. It's totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things not necessarily criticism lately, but we had, as you saw, and, you know, if anyone watching saw, we had a guy who was purposely reporting our posts just to get the account taken down, basically. Or he said that was his intention. His intention was that he just had a bot set up that's, you know, to report a page over and over and over and over and over again. And he wanted to see if it would work.
And
he
tried it out.
And he tried it out on us for some reason. I'm like, well,
is there something that you guys ever like alluded to in your content that he took personally? Or
no,
you don't know?
I mean, I don't think so. No.
That he voiced, at least.
He said that, you know? He said that we didn't do anything.
Loser.
Yeah, but basically what happened was, I was like, we kind of work pretty hard on this. Like, I mean, like we've, you know, got in touch with, like, we bought all this stuff. We, you know, started up a podcast. We post every day. We make our own things. And he was like, yeah, you don't work very hard. I posted 5,000 memes and only got 35,000 followers. And I'm like, I don't know if you missed that, but that just shows that we do a better job than you. We have 130 posts or something, 180 posts, and we have 22,000 followers. And we did it because we marketed our page. We got in touch with these local businesses. We make our own content, all of it. I mean, 5,000 posts, he was fucking stealing.
Well, the reason why I appreciate what you guys do, and I've learned, I'm getting more involved. I was always active with social media, but I wasn't going about it the right way. What I noticed, there's a comic named Vic DiBattetto who, you know, was like a mentor to me early on in my career, and I used to work with, and he went viral. It's so funny because I remember doing a show with him and he had just gotten an iPhone. And he's like, yeah, you know, my son, he gets annoyed, but can you show me how to do this and then that? And I would like, you know, just like, oh yeah, well, that's the record button and all this stuff. And then a couple months, you know, he was putting out videos every day and really grinding it. And then the bread and milk video went super viral. And he always makes the joke, you know, 30 seconds got me more than 30 years of comedy.
Yeah.
He went viral. He's blowing up. He's doing theaters now, stuff like that. And he's up in a different stratosphere. Yeah. But my point is that he had the tools to back up what the viral fame brought him.
Sure. Yeah.
And what we're seeing now in stand up, and I'm not shitting on anybody, whatever you know you can do. There are guys that are making funny videos that are now taking it to the stage, and they don't have the chops.
And they suck.
So they're selling out these places, but then after 15 minutes, it's like, oh shit. And you know, look, their fan base loves it. It's funny because the Jank shows I'm doing, I got these beautiful, you know, bartenders from Jank's, these girls that, you know, they're from Staten Island. They're like, oh, I want so-and-so because he does these videos that makes me laugh. And I go, yeah. And you know what? If I put so-and-so up there,
and he sucks.
Unless he fills the place with his entire fan base, it's going to fucking be bad, you know? And I'm not begrudging him. So what I'm trying to do now is I'm putting a lot more out there as far as, you know, to that, because I know I have the chops now to back it up. Vic DiBattista had the chops to back it up. A lot of these guys that are really targeting their videos, they get that, they get to that level where they can sell out places, but they don't have what it takes to back it up. And that's, you know, thing. Plus the other thing I noticed too is I'll see people, they'll go, hey, make this viral. Help me. That's not how it works. No, like, it's something just has to catch on and go.
And I think the other thing is you talking about people who, you know, start, they make their name like on the video medium. And it's easy. It's not that it's easier to be funny on video, but you get, I mean, you have takes, you can do it as many times as you want. You can cut it up. And it's like, I think people think that because that they're funny on YouTube or something, that they can make that transition into stand up and you know, go up live and be just as funny. And then I think when they get up there and they're not as funny, it's kind of like a, you know, like a reality check.
Well, it's also too, we, you know, as far as that always existed, you know, and before YouTube and social media as a whole, you had people that could make people laugh at parties and then thinking, okay, I could be a comic. You know, it's so funny to me because one of the funniest, most purely funny human beings I ever met was this kid, Paul Connor, who I went to elementary and high school with. And it's funny because he's come to see me do stand up a few times and he's like, bro, he's like, I don't know how you do it. And I'm like, to me, that's funny to hear because I always thought he was the funniest fucking kid that ever lived. And he still is.
Yeah.
We had a teacher at, I went to Monsignor Donovan and God bless him. I hope he's still alive. His name was Deacon Frank and he was a great guy. And he would talk like this and he would do the morning announcements and, you know, he'd be like, okay, this Saturday there's a dance. And we had him for marriage class, which was hilarious because he would be like, okay, guys, the point of marriage is to live together forever in God's kingdom as one. So naturally, we'd fuck with the guy, right? And I wasn't really good at being able to break his chops because I'd crack up laughing. Paul was just like stone-faced. So one day, Deacon Frank starts class and he goes, okay, class, does anyone in here have an exotic pet? I'm not talking about a dog or a cat. Something really out there. So Paul's hand shoots up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, don't call on him. Because I just know this is going to be like brutal, right? Paul, what's your exotic pet? Well, Deacon Frank, I have a beaver. And so you would think right off the bat, like any normal person, especially an intelligent person, would go, and for those of you listening that aren't Catholic, deacons are basically like priests, except they're allowed to have sex with adults. And so he goes, really, Paul, you have a beaver? And Paul goes, well, actually, it's my sister's. Now, that right there, that's, you would think, okay, like abort this, right? Just so I'm biting my lip. He goes, tell us about your sister's beaver.
Oh, set him up like that.
So Paul goes, well, you know, it's she doesn't take good care of it, and it's really hairy and gross, and it smells, and it's very sloppy.
Just right over his head.
Well, have you ever considered taking care of your sister's beaver? Oh. Paul goes, well, yeah, I tried, but my father caught me and got really pissed. And so now I'm like fucking, you know, and to me, that is just like, wow, man, like that, he kept completely straight-faced. Whatever. And yet he's telling me when he sees me on stage, how do you do that? Yeah. I'm like, how do I do that? Bro, we were 15 and you were talking basically innuendos about your sister's vagina to a deacon. Like what I feel what you did was much more difficult than what I'm doing. Sure. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, again, it's all about, you know, context and how people feel about, you know, whatever. But yeah. I'm sorry, I mean, we went way off.
No, no. I love it. It's great story. Like that. I gotta say, man, like out of all of our other like podcasts, like one thing me and Jared were like talking about beforehand was like, you know, we're scared with this is people's like first time being in front of the camera sometimes and things like that. Yeah. And we said to me and like, we were like, you know, Ryan, it's going to be easy. It's going to be like a conversation and we're all chill guys. So this is just, it just sounds like us just sitting down or at
a bar. I just hope you don't lose any sponsors for having me. I don't want Rook to be like, we don't want our pro.
Okay. Rook doesn't sponsor us
anyway.
Oh, they don't? I thought they did.
No.
No.
We're trying.
You should put tape over
there. No, no, no. We're trying. We're trying. We look at all these, companies right here.
Yeah.
You're supposed to lie and say they are.
They're all sponsors. Imagine, they're paying us.
Imagine we get the Costco Kirkland. That's money.
Kirkland. Yeah. I have everything Kirkland. I got toilet paper, everything. I'll never have to pay to wipe my ass again.
We'll have the food court food. Like I'll put a churro here, that you know, that $2 hot dog.
Yeah, a Sbarro.
Absolutely, yeah. That'd be fantastic.
So quickly, I mean, just about like the, you know, the New Jersey comedy scene. I mean, I know you were saying that you like a lot of like, you know, you're more into like the smaller comics who really grind and things like that. But there are some bigger name ones. I know, I think Jon Stewart's from like Middletown. Like he's from closer to here.
It's funny. I just did Catch a Rising Star. It's like my home comedy club now.
Okay.
And the room in Princeton, the club in Princeton. Don't want to use too much comedy lingo, but the club in Princeton, it's been there since like 87 and he started there.
Great.
Yeah. I've never met John. It's funny you say that, but I have a buddy who is an architect that actually built his house and he gave John like my CD and stuff. And John was pretty cool from what I, you know, was told. I mean, he could have thought I sucked, but told my buddy that he thought it was good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Jersey comedy scene, you know, it's tough because like, you know, it's New York and LA. Those are the big scenes per se. And then Jersey, you have a lot of like these one nighters and, you know, there's a couple, you know, real comedy clubs. It's the Stress Factory. It's Bananas. It's Catch a Rising Star. And then there's just a lot of these places that, you know, you got to be careful sometimes because there'll be people that will lie and say, oh, well, you know, you may have seen him on Comedy Central when in reality he had a free ticket to The Daily Show and the camera panned him.
Sure.
But other than that, I mean, I'm in a very good position right now. And the Jenks thing really kind of changed the game for me in a lot of ways.
Can you talk about that a moment?
Absolutely. Yeah. So PJ Storino, whose family owns Jenks and Jenkinsons, we became friendly a couple years ago. And Joe Romano, who's the bar manager at Jenks, I've known for years from going out and stuff. And they had seen my shows a few times and they had approached me and said, you know, what if we did something like where you were the host, you booked the comics, and it's like people that you want to showcase. And I love that idea because I was a huge fan of the old Rodney Dangerfield Young Comedian specials where Dice and Seinfeld and all those guys got their break.
Exactly.
And like we were saying before, I would perform at these comedy clubs where if I was the headliner, I'd be like, why they have this guy opening for me? Or if I was the opener, I'd be like, why they have me in front of this headliner, you know? It got to a point where I was like, yeah, you know, that's something to think about. But the guy who I was associated with at the time, I was like, I know he's going to get pissed. So I kind of put it on the back burner. Then when I separated from that guy, I called them back up. I'm like, do you want to do it? They said, yeah, let's do it. And summer of 2017, we did three shows. We called it Ryan Marr and Friends. Last summer, we did six. And it kept growing and growing. This year, they wanted to do every week. And I thought that might be a little too much. So I said, well, listen, you know, because now school, when I was in high school and elementary school, by June, my birthday is June 17th. My birthday was either after the last day of school or on the last day. Now school, it's like they're almost going until July. So I said, you know, the teachers aren't going to be off, you know, and the teachers like to come out and party. So we need to start like right after 4th of July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. We're doing nine shows. And I also said to them, I don't want to call it Ryan Marr and Friends anymore. I said, because I feel like that limits it. If you're in Ocean and Monmouth County and you're a comedy fan, you know who I am. But outside of that, you're not going to. So if you see Ryan Marr and Friends Comedy, you could be thinking like, what is this? Like some shitty improv troupe, whatever. So we're calling it Jenks Comedy Club hosted by Ryan Marr. And we got nine shows. And I mean, I got some killers, man. I got Shane Gillis, like I said, doing the first one. My friend Jessie Mae Peluso, who blew up, we started out together. You know, she wound up blowing up. She was the star of MTV's Girl Code.
Yeah.
She's been on Joe Rogan's podcast, Joey Diaz's podcast. She's really killing it. She's doing the September 1st show. So I bookended that with like, those are like the two names on the up and up. And then everybody else are just these solid headliners. I also have Nori Davis, August 18th. He just had a Comedy Central special in November. And these are all people that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to work with over the years. And there's shows that I wanted to book, guys I wanted to showcase, women I've wanted to showcase. And the way that I paired the shows, I said, okay, this guy's act is going to work well with this one. It's going to be a solid show from start to finish. So I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, I mean, between Bar A with Tommy Janarone and the guys at Jenks, like, they're letting me do what I want to do. And it's so cool that they're saying, hey, you know what? We're going to pay you and we're going to give you the space, but we trust you. You know, like tomorrow at Bar A, I got Gabby Bryan, hilarious. Dennis Rooney, just a killer. Actually tough to follow, which I like. I like that. And it's just a great time, man. Yeah. I like being able to do that. I've never been the type that can be like, oh, well, you know, I don't want my opener to not be, you know, too strong. Yeah. And you deal with that too. I've had big names who I won't mention that I've opened for them once. And the next time they'd be like, oh no, we can't have him. Because, you know, no, motherfucker, they're there to see you.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're not paying to see Ryan Moore. You should want them to already be at this point.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so that you could just keep them there or bring it higher. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I guess at that point we can move on to what we're going to do is our last segment, which for the past couple of podcasts has been like a 20 questions rapid fire. But because, you know, we've heard so much about your days as a train conductor and how much you hated it, we thought that we'd come up with a game where we say train conductor or this job.
I just want to, and I will play this game, but yes. I just want to clarify that there were elements of the job that I hated, that I was more in my own head.
Sure.
I didn't like the downtime where you'd have like the 2-hour break and you were stuck talking to some of these miserable motherfuckers. Because honestly, if you've ever ridden a train, you've seen yes. how unhappy these guys are. Mm-hmm. And look, a lot of it is because dealing with the public is not easy, but a lot of these guys choose to be fucking miserable.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny too, the laziness too. When I was just in LA, I was in California. I took a train from Ventura to LA, and it was a 2-hour train ride through Amtrak. And I was looking forward to it because I'm like, you know, it's going to be scenic. It's going to be beautiful. I've never seen this side of California from the train. My buddy, I swear to God, he says to me, he goes, don't buy a ticket. I go, why? He goes, because you were a train conductor. You know how it works. He goes, they're not going to want to cut the ticket on the train. It was like a $50 train ticket. I get on, I sit down, the conductor comes over. He goes, ticket? I go, hey man, I'm from New Jersey. I didn't know how to work the machine. He goes, okay, I'll be right back. He never came back. 2 hours.
Yep,
we did.
And then, we see train conductors, like, they're just lazy. Not all of them, but just miserable.
We see that.
We do that too when we go to Bar A all the time. We take the train to Belmar.
Oh, yeah.
I have the app on my phone.
Like, yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll be like, ah, man, like, I'm down. Like, I can't connect to the internet. I'll open it right now. And the guy's like, all right, I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Never comes back.
Well, it's funny because I used to do those Bar A trains occasionally in the summer. And it was funny because all the other conductors hated them because they were the Bar A trains and like they didn't want to deal with you guys. Yeah. And I hated them because I wanted to be partying with you guys. Like, I was like, fuck this, dude. Because Bar A back in the day, I mean, even in the winter, my first time ever at Bar A was a Tuesday in the winter and the line would be down the block.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just kick ass. And that was before Asbury became huge and Pier Village.
Yeah.
So if you went to Monmouth, you were going to Bar A. They had shuttles going back and forth.
Yeah,
it was
like
wild.
Tuesday, beat the clock. So I'll start out. So I'll do the first
hopefully
one.
Hopefully you don't pick train conductor for everything. That would kind of take the fun away.
Yeah, we'll see. So the first one that we're going to do, train conductor or, so ready? Train conductor or sewer cleaner?
I'd have to go train conductor because I have just a really weak stomach. Like,
you're going to pick train conductor for everything. Then.
Like I saw your dog and I was like, I don't even want to pick up that dog shit.
You really don't.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I'd pick train conductor.
All right, here's this one's train conductor or animal urine collector.
Oh, yeah, I mean, train conductor, definitely.
So train conductor or manure
inspector? I see where your guys' minds
were
at when you were thinking of
trust me,
thinking
it,
this game. What was
it
that
gets
one?
Much worse.
Train conductor or manure inspector?
I think we know. Now I know why you prefaced it with, I hope you don't pick train. Did you guys really think I'd be like, yeah, animal feces is better than...
Well, I don't know.
If it was such a miserable experience, maybe you have like PTSD when you even think about it.
Well,
maybe
no,
you
would stop really it. With pick, you, I could tell you're young, too. PTSD is for soldiers, and well, that's
no,
it.
They,
okay,
they,
stop
they,
it.
They call... Listen, hindsight is always 20/20. So you might be looking back like, oh, you know, it wasn't that bad. But if you were a train conductor right now, you'd be like, oh, I'll fucking take that animal urine right now.
You know, that's a good point, too. Yeah. It's funny. There was one guy who was a corrections officer who was like, you know, he goes, this is fucking worse than being a corrections officer. And I'm like, really, dude? I'm like, you know, you get to, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever. I mean, perspective is everything. Keep going.
Sure. Go next year.
This next one, yeah, train conductor or barnyard masturbator.
That's a job?
It's that, you know, they artificially inseminate cows.
Where do I send my resume for that one? I'll jerk off a cow. Is it the same as milking a cow?
I mean, it's not udders, it's a dick.
Yeah, but what about like for the, you know, like those $1 million horses? Like obviously, yeah, well, like
you probably get a lot of money to jerk off those horses.
Yeah. I saw a thing on Real Sports a bunch of years ago where there was like this one horse that it they would charge for him to stud. Like it was like 70,000.
It goes for more.
It's unbelievable.
And this fucking horse would bang 20 mares a day or something like that.
I was in Kentucky working on a shoot. Like,
were you?
Yeah, I was in Lexington.
I was marrying my cousin. Anyway,
yeah, I was in Kentucky marrying my... No, I was working on a documentary down there, and I was talking to this guy. He's like, they're all crazy about horses. They're all crazy about the Derby, and there's so many expensive barns. Like American Pharoah is like $200,000.
Well, it's owned by Taylor... I forget the company, but yeah, like the business, but yeah, it's sold for like
$200,000 just, you know, for him to mate with one of the other horses.
It just dawned on me that you remind me of Johnny Lawrence from Cobra Kai, the young
Johnny
Lawrence. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm like, what is this guy? Like, he reminds me of young Johnny. You guys watch that?
It's on YouTube.
Yeah. I'm a huge like Karate Kid nerd. Like it came out in 84. I was only one, but like my dad.
Can you give me Ralph Macchio or no? Not even close.
Get the fuck out of here.
I would love to.
You kind of look like, what was the guy on My Name is Earl? Like he's kind of.
Oh, God. What's his name?
Yeah, was it Jason Lee?
I think it was Jason Lee.
All right, more of this titillating game.
So, train conductor or a roller coaster vomit collector? So, the people that just.
You're just making up jobs.
No, I swear to God. I thought it was made up, but I looked it up.
That would be basically a maintenance person at the theme park.
No, but at this specific theme park, there was a ride that people threw up on so often that his only job was to clean up vomit on this specific ride.
I got to go train conductor. Yeah. Because it's all bodily fluid shit. Yeah, I can't handle it. My stomach's weak.
Train conductor, hazmat diver. So what a hazmat diver does is they put on a suit, like a hazmat suit, and they jump into dangerous chemicals.
Fuck that. But why would they, what's the, like, are they looking for something?
For repairs and stuff like that. If they're in a, you know, it's like a waste facility or something they got to jump in there.
Fuck that, dude.
This next one's not as bad. You'd be making more than like six figures doing this next one. So
train conductor or male proctologist?
What? So I'd have to just like, you know, look up assholes all
day? Pretty much all
day. Only dudes. So like no chicks though.
Oh yeah, because sometimes I want to even inspect a woman's asshole. What kind of shit are you into?
I don't know if it's like. Makes it even worse.
Look, I'll eat ass, but I've never wanted to. Go up there with a flashlight and be like, "Oh, do you have hemorrhoids?" I mean, what the? You guys are into some wacky shit. He's like, "Only males, only male rectums."
That was him. No. That was entirely you.
It pays like $400 a year.
$400,000 a year.
Yeah, but that's a lot of schooling involved, and that's got to be depressing. True. And I also read something too, where like dentists have like the highest suicide rate of any occupation because it's like a very depressing thing, like looking in people's mouths. So, I mean, I'm like, how are proctologists not higher? Like you're in people's assholes. No, I'm going to go with train conductor. I'm sorry, guys. I feel it's like I'm disappointing you here.
No. It's good. We're still having good conversations. So that's all that matters. Train conductor or slaughterhouse worker.
Yeah. Train conductor. You know, here's the thing. I'm not going to be one of those. I love meat. But yeah, I don't think I could ever, and I hate saying it because I know it's a necessity, but I don't think I could bring myself to kill an animal. I have a buddy who's a cop in Brick and he tells me about like when a deer, and I love venison too. I love venison. But you know, he'll even tell me stories about like a deer getting hit by a car and then like they have to shoot it to like put it out of its misery. And I'm like, I don't even think I could do that.
Yeah.
No. So yeah, that definitely train conductor.
Okay. So train conductor, this is kind of weird. What is this, like chimney sweeper? So what would you rather do?
What am I, fucking Chim Chiru?
Mary Poppins.
Dick Van Dyke over here.
Yeah. Spitting image.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I'll go train conductor.
We might as well skip this next one, but train conductor or porta potty cleaner.
Oh dude. What do they do? They put like a hose to a truck, right?
Yeah. But you have to drive around that truck that smells like, you know, shit.
So you're smelling.
You don't actually go in there.
I could listen to podcasts all day.
Yeah, like this one.
Yeah.
No.
You know what? I mean, it depends. I would have to know more about the job. That actually doesn't sound too bad because you're not actually, like, you just put the hose down and you sucks it up, right?
Yeah.
True.
You don't still got to go train conduct. Maybe it wasn't that fucking bad. I wonder if they'll take me back.
This will push you back into doing that part time. So the next one, I'm going to say it, but I want to have JR explain because he picked this. Okay. So train conductor.
Why are you putting this on me?
Train conductor or a fluffer. Do you know what a fluffer is?
Yeah, I know what a fluffer is. But if it, I mean, if it was females, obviously I would choose fluffer.
Yeah.
Okay.
What if the only opening was a male fluffer? No, and you, what if they were giving you $100,000?
Not doing it, because you know what? They don't pay men as much in that industry.
That's true.
Someone don't. Needs to make a stand.
Yeah. True. Johnny Sins, represent.
Yeah. Wow, he knows names.
He's the guy.
Only the male names.
Yeah, only male names. Sure.
I know a lot of. It's funny. I got to do the Fanny Awards a couple of years ago. I wrote jokes.
Oh no.
And it was basically, the Fanny Awards are like the Porn Choice Awards. So yeah. It was through Exotica and it was in Atlantic City, and dude, it was wild. I mean, some of the shit that I saw, it got to a point, Ron Jeremy came up. So basically I was associated, it wasn't a manager, but there was a guy who I knew who, he got attached to, remember Bell Knox? She was the Duke University porn star.
Yes.
She made like national
Max
news.
Max is like, I watched her all the time.
She was on Piers Morgan. Saver. So she was appearing. So they were like, oh, we'll walk on the red carpet with her or whatever, do your thing. And because I was at her booth for Exotica, Ron Jeremy comes over to introduce himself to her. And then I get introduced to Ron Jeremy, and he's like, oh, you're a comic? And I'm like, yeah. And he's telling me stories about like doing cocaine with Rodney Dangerfield and like all this stuff. And I'm like, this guy's so fucking cool. By the end of the night, I was like, get Ron Jeremy the fuck away from me. Yeah. He was so fucking annoying. And like, it was an interesting business, man. They gave the one guy, Evan Stone, like a lifetime achievement award, and he fucking cried.
Oh,
and
my
I'm
God.
Sitting there going, oh no, that's bullshit. It's gotta be an act. But no, dude, like, he was legit.
Yeah, they get into,
like,
it.
Dude, I don't judge him. You know, I'm not going to be one of those guys that pretends like I don't occasionally watch. You know,
yeah, wait, what's porn?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, whatever. So it's one of those things where it's like, God bless them. But I would, if I could be a female fluffer, I would of course take that over train conducting.
Okay.
Any day.
So the next one, Ryan, would you rather be a train conductor or the cleaner of roadkill?
Well, going back to what I just said about my buddy who's the cop who had to shoot a deer, I'd have to go train conductor. I can't handle dead animals. So I would
just looking fuck at me them. Up.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, I saw a squirrel a couple of weeks ago get nailed by the car in front of me, and that fucked me up. So I actually one night, I felt really bad about this too. I used to drive a Ford Mustang convertible. It was 2006, bought it right off the showroom floor. It was beautiful. This is when I was train conductor and made money. And me and Tommy Janarone, the one night from Var A, were driving, and we stopped at the White Castle on 35 in Eatontown, actually. We're driving, you know, back to his house in Interlake, and I'm going down 35, and I got like a bag of White Castle, and I got like a burger in each hand, and I'm steering with like my knee, right? Which is fucking dangerous.
I do it all the time.
And a possum comes walking across. Ooh. And I felt so terrible because there was no way I could swerve, you know, and then I wasn't going to slam on the brakes. So Tommy's in the front seat, I'm driving, and I see it, and it looks up at me, and I angled it so that my car, the tires wouldn't hit it, that it would just go right over. But the Mustang was so low to the ground that all you heard was the thing looks up, and then you just heard, and I went, oh, fuck. And I'm like, don't look back, don't look back. And I looked back, and the thing was just fucking, and I was like, oh, man. And that ruined my like life for 2 weeks. I was like, oh, that fucking thing.
You're thinking about
so
it.
I couldn't pick it up. I couldn't clean. No way.
And this
I'm glad we're ending on a very positive note.
This next one's even better.
We just want to ruin your day.
We really want to ruin your day. We want you to go home feeling miserable.
Be like, why the fuck did I come on?
Last one is train conductor or an embalmer.
Would that be like funeral director or is embalmer?
No, you would be the person who actually takes the body and prepares them for
that's
the
funeral.
That's
a funeral director.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd have to go with train conductor. It's funny though that you mentioned that, because a girl who I went to high school with, who was a smoke show and still is, like, we're on Facebook. I haven't seen her in years, but judging by her picture, she still is. She actually hit me up and was like, oh my God, I'm going to come to one of your shows like within the last 2 months. And then she's like, oh no, I can't. I got called into work. And so I'm thinking like, oh, what do you do? And and she's like, I'm a funeral director. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things. You don't think like, you know, I graduated high school almost 20 years ago, 2001. You don't know what paths people take, but it's like, I don't know. I guess you just have this macabre kind of, you know, visual or stereotype of the people that would get into that line of work. But apparently it's very lucrative. And, but you know what? I'm still going to punch tickets and open doors.
I mean,
on
yeah,
the train.
You should definitely contact the NJ Transit because it sounds like you really fucking miss it.
Unless I'm fluffing females.
Unless you're fluffing females, will absolutely
choose
train.
So either one. So just put that.
I mean, I got to see what the medical benefits would be to be a fluffer.
I would assume they're not very good.
No. But you're
probably have a very high, I mean, high chance of STDs. So it's,
but you certainly will. Well, don't get, because I have anxiety lately now too. Like, what I like a hypochondria thing. Being involved in the pro wrestling business and comedy and all this stuff, I see a lot of people die. You know, like you just do. So, like, anytime anything happens, I'm like, oh my God, what do I have? Like, I'll WebMD myself.
Oh, me, I am exactly the same way.
So, my mom is a nurse, and, you know, her and I have always been very close. And she actually said to me, she's like, you're driving me fucking nuts. She's like, you have health insurance, you're paying for it, go to a doctor. So I went and I picked Dr. Jerry Horowitz as my primary doctor, because I like a kind of doctor that I don't have to be judged by. Like Dr. Horowitz, he's like a big, you know, oafish kind of a guy. Mm. His lab coat always has coffee stains on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
And I still find myself lying to him, like, because he'll say to me, like, you know, well, how often do you drink? I'm like, yeah, occasionally. He's like, well, how often's occasionally? I'm like, maybe 8 times a week.
Yeah.
He's like, that's more than occasionally, you know? And then he'll be like, marijuana use? And I'll be like, oh, definitely occasionally. He's like, okay, how often? I'm like, well, when I wake up in the morning and when I go to bed at night. So I still lie to him. But he goes, listen, he goes, I'm going to test you for everything. He goes, I'm going to do the blood work. He goes, I'm going to test for AIDS. And I'm like, I'm too fat for AIDS. Right? I've seen Philadelphia with Tom Hanks. I definitely don't have AIDS. And so we're going through the whole thing. And he goes, I'm only going to call you. He goes, if, you know, there's something seriously wrong. He goes, if you don't hear from me, no news is good news. So I'm like, all right, fine. So I take the blood work. They send it to the lab. 3 days later, phone rings, Dr. Horowitz's office. I see it on the phone. I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying. Right? Answer the phone. Woman goes, hi, this is Bianca from Dr. Horowitz's office. Is this Ryan Marr? I go, yes, it is. She goes, hi, Ryan. How are you? I'm like, I'm good, Bianca. What's up? She's like, this is Ryan, correct? I'm like, yes, this is Ryan. What's up? She goes, I have your test results. I'm like, okay, you know, fucking get to it. Thinking like, you know, oh my God, I have diabetes, right? That's a possibility, right? Yeah. So all this stuff. So she goes, okay, let me see. I'm like fucking ready to put my head through the wall.
Yeah.
She goes, okay, you have a vitamin D deficiency.
Oh yeah.
So I go, really? That's why you fucking called?
She's like,
she goes, excuse me. Yeah. She goes, yeah, you have a vitamin D deficiency. You have a prescription that I'll tell you what, I'll just drink more in the sun. I go, summer's coming. I'll be at Bar A. I'll be at Tiki Monday. I'll be at Jank's. Like, this guy told me we're only going to call with something serious. I'm like, and now I need to drink more milk?
Yeah.
Fucking really? Like,
she's like, yeah, you got a vitamin D deficiency and like herpes.
But yeah. And even herpes, that ain't going to kill you, you know? And you can only catch it on an outbreak, I think, right?
Sure. Yeah, yes. I think. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, who needs condoms? I'm not a sailor.
So, I mean, this basically wraps up the podcast. I want to say, Ryan, thanks again for coming
on. Thank you, guys. I had a lot of fun, and I'm Ryan Marr Comedy on Instagram.
Yeah, I want you to plug. Tell us about, like, you know, all, like, the future stuff of, like, the dates of, like,
I'll just stick with, you know, right now, Ryan Marr Comedy on Instagram, RyanMahur Comedy. Like, you know, you guys pointed out, some of the better jokes on Facebook, I'll just screenshot and post on the story on Instagram. Facebook's fun. That's the one thing that I do prefer about Facebook over Instagram. And maybe this is showing my age, but I like the interactions with people. And sometimes, you know, you get really good threads going on Facebook that I feel you don't get on Instagram.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'll even screenshot some of that craziness too, and I'll post it to my story. So if you guys want to follow me, please do so. By the time this podcast airs, the gigs that I have this weekend, obviously it'll be past, but I'll be at Jank's. Jank's Comedy Club, hosted by Ryan Marr, every Tuesday night this summer. Tickets are $10 if you're a Jank's VIP club card holder. You get the show for free. So July 7th, we got Shane Gillis. July 14th, R.C. Smith. 21st, Tim Crompier. 28th, Mark Riccadonna. August 4th, Chrissy Mayer. August 11th, we're doing a hypnotist show, which is really cool. And my buddy Mike Racine's also headlining that.
Never
one.
He's done that.
Comedy
wow,
Central
okay.
special. August 18th, we got Nori Davis. August 25th, we got Joey Gay, who was a finalist on the original season of Last Comic Standing. Hilarious. And then September 1st, Jesse May Peluso. So those are the shows this summer at Jank's. They're all on Tuesday nights. 8:30 at night, you'll be home. You know, the show will be out between 10 and 10:30, so you'll be home by 11 if you're local. And yeah, man, just Ryan Marr Comedy Instagram, and we'll definitely bullshit and have some fun.
I can't wait. We're going to Bar A. By the time this, like you're saying, airs, we're going to go to your Bar A show. We can't wait for that.
Definitely in the summer, though. I'd love to go.
For sure.
It'd be awesome. I did a hypnotist show once, and it didn't work. I couldn't.
Where'd you go to?
I was in Vermont for a summer, and there was this guy, and like half the people, it worked, half the people didn't.
This guy that I have August 11th, his name is Denny Moore. And it's funny because Brittany Storino from Jinx was actually the one who wanted a hypnotist. She's like, I want a hypnotist here. So I went and I got Denny Moore. And I had never worked with Denny, but ironically, he was the guy for years at Fright Fest. Yeah. Six Flags Great Adventure, he had a show called Hypnisteria. And when I was like 17, I went up and I got hypnotized by him. And he's also been on the Jerry Springer show. So he's done some wild shit. And he's a comic too. So it's going to be more of like an adult-oriented hypnotist show. And then I got Mike Racine, who's a hilarious comic. He's going to do like a half hour beforehand. So it's going to be fun, man. I'm really just trying to, you know, bring back that whole night out. I like the idea of doing a show where people can come out. We've had people last summer that would come out to me and go, hey, you know, I was with my wife and my grandkids. We got a house for the week. I just wanted to get out and have a few beers. I'm walking on the boardwalk. I saw the sign. We came in.
Sure.
That's what I love doing. I like that aspect of like kind of like what Wildwood does and, you know, what we see in God's Secrets in Ocean City, Maryland. Okay, not even Seaside. The Jersey Shore has kind of gotten away from entertainment like as a night out option. It's all just bars, DJs, clubs.
It is.
You know, so what I like is almost having like that dinner and show type of feel. And I feel like there's nobody else doing that. So if you want to come out and have fun on a Tuesday night, Jenks Club this summer.
Hell yeah, absolutely. We're going to go.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, podcast comes out every other Friday. So leave comments, likes, let us know who you'd like to see on, what kind of questions you'd like us to ask. And look forward to seeing you then.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for watching.
Thank you, guys.